Thank you. We'd like to advise all parties today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect, and thank you. You may begin.
Okay, thank you. Before we start, we're going to have the roll call as the first item, but I do want to welcome Pierre Bonis, and please correct my pronunciation, who is the observer who's been appointed by the CCNSO to participate with the GNSO this year, GNSO Council this year. So I wanted to welcome him and wanted to ask Glenn if you could do the roll call.
Certainly, Avery. Philip Shepherd.
Present.
Mike Rodenbach.
Here.
Saeed Jamil.
Present.
Uta Dekker.
Present.
Christine Rosette.
Present.
Cyril Chua has excused himself. He won't be on the call. Tony Holmes.
Present.
Tony Harris. I think he's just dropped off. Greg Ruth.
Here.
Mary Wong. William Drake. Carlos Souza.
Here.
Adrian Kinderis has excused himself. He won't be on the call. Kim Ruiz.
Here.
Stefan Van Felder.
Yes, I'm here.
Jordi Iparaguera. Jordi.
Present.
Chuck Gomes.
Here.
Edmund Chan.
Here.
Kerry Davis. Avery Doria. Olga Cavelli.
Present.
Alan Greenberg.
Here.
And we have Pierre Bonis, who is the CCNSO observer. And for staff, we have Dan Halloran, Denise Michel, Rob Hogarth, Olaf Nordling, Marika Koenig, Liz Gaster, Patrick Jones, Craig Schwartz, Kieran McCarthy, Tim Cole, and have I left off anybody from staff?
Glenn, Tony Harris just rejoined.
Thank you. Tony?
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry I got cut off.
Thank you. And William Drake has just joined too.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you all for joining. I very much appreciate the strong support from the staff on this meeting. Going through, are there any statements of interest to update? I'll mention that I updated mine over the last couple weeks, basically just to clarify who I did and didn't have contracts with, et cetera, but there were really no substantive changes in the fact that I still am not making any income off of any ICANN-related industries or whatever. Does anyone else have any statement of interest to update at this time? Okay, thanks. Just like to remind everyone to update it as necessary and to let us know at the beginning of a meeting that you have done so and leave it open to any comments or questions. Okay. The next thing is to review amend the agenda. Two amendments have been made on it since it was last sent out. One, item 9, which was the GNSO comments regarding the IDN CCTLD Fast Track Implementation Plan, was removed as a discussion item since that was submitted yesterday. However, we do still have that under the status update, just in case there's any status or whatever to add to it. The other thing that was added was an any other business item on the ACSO, which is the Joint ACs and SO meeting that occurs at the regular meeting, and basically just a comment to make regarding that and the any other business. Does anyone have and then I should mention one other thing with regard to item A and the RAA discussion and vote. Hopefully people saw the message that I sent just before the meeting. One of the two motions that had been tabled at the last meeting for this meeting was inadvertently left off the wiki. It has been put there now. I'm hoping that's not an issue, but I did want to bring that one up. And, of course, we can discuss it further when we get to that item. Any other comments or any other business changes of the agenda? Okay. If not, moving on to item 3, which is approving the GNSO Council minutes of 20 November 2008. Do I have someone that moves to accept those minutes?
Philip.
Okay, thank you, Philip. Do I have a second?
Yeah, I'll second Stefan.
Okay, thank you, Stefan. Any comments or discussion on those? I'll take a few. Okay, on hearing no comments or discussion, all those in favor of accepting those minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
I'll second. Any opposed to accepting those minutes, please say nay. Any abstentions? Okay, thank you. The minutes are accepted unanimously. For item 4, I pass the chair over to Chuck.
Okay, thanks, Aubrey. Glenn, would you please just give a brief recap? I know that you sent out the results yesterday, but if you could quickly review that. Hopefully everyone's had a chance to check their vote. If you would do that, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Chuck. I will. Voting closed yesterday for the position of chair for the GNSO Council, and the results are, with weighted voting, 24 votes for Avery Doria, 1 vote against. The required number of votes to be elected is 14, so Avery is elected. 21 ballots were sent out, 21 ballots were returned, but one was a duplicate, so 20 votes were cast, and one person did not vote. It would be good if you could check to see that your vote was recorded correctly, and then council is required to confirm the vote.
Any questions or comments? Okay. Does anyone object to having a voice vote on this? And all we're doing is confirming the election? Okay, hearing no objections, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any
aye.
Opposed? Any abstain?
I abstain. This is Aubrey.
Okay, Aubrey abstained. Okay. Thank you, Aubrey. All right, congratulations, Aubrey. And thanks for all your all the great amount of time that you put into this in support of the council work.
Thank you.
And I will turn the chair back to you.
Okay, thank you. And thank you all for participating in the vote and for re-electing me.
Aubrey, you're sounding kind of distant.
Oh, okay. Microphone dropping away from my... Is that any better?
A little bit.
Yes.
Okay, and I'll try to speak louder then. Okay, the next item is the RAA discussion and vote. This was on our agenda at the last meeting where we discussed two motions on the RAA. The first one made by Tim, actually both made by Tim Ruiz and seconded by Chuck Gomes. Just to review, the first motion was, whereas ICANN has undertaken a lengthy consultative process related to amending the Registrar Accreditation Agreement, RAA, the parties have arrived at a set of amendments that are generally thought to be worthy of inclusion in the RAA. Resolved, the GNSO Council supports the attached RAA amendments and recommends to the board that they be adopted. And then there was a second motion, which was also made by Tim Ruiz and seconded by Chuck Gomes. Whereas the GNSO Council has recommended that the RAA amendments developed by the ICANN committee be adopted, there is a belief that additional amendments to the RAA may be required. The registrar constituency is open to continuing the dialogue about changes to the RAA. Resolve, the GNSO Council calls on ICANN to establish a consultative process by which to review the superset of community-suggested RAA issues and amendments not addressed in the present set of amendments, and to work with registrars to develop a procedure for proposing additional amendments in the future. Now, that's the amendments, but before opening up the floor to discussion, I also wanted to mention that there was a clarification that could be given by staff on the effect of voting for the first motion in terms of when these things, went into effect or in what way they went into effect and the process that it follows after this that should be discussed before we go on to our discussion. So I'm not sure who from the staff was going to speak to this at the moment. Was it Dan or was it someone else from the staff that was...
Aubrey, this is Tim Cole.
Tim, were you going to speak to it? Okay, thank you.
I think the question was the how it would be, how would they would go into effect?
Basically, just the clarification on the process that occurs after we have voted on them and assuming that they're approved and sent or what goes on between that point and them going into effect.
Okay, I will speak to that, and if I leave anything out or anything, I'll let Dan fill in the gaps. But assuming this passes with 2/3 support from the GNSO, we would then proceed to a public comment period before advancing for the board to vote on it. Assuming the board approves it, then the amended RAA would go in force for registrars as they renew their contracts. Every registrar is at some stage of a 5-year contract. So at the end of their current term, they would be renewed with the new contract language. There is also a provision in the RAA that allows for voluntary adoption of the contract earlier than the renewal date. So we could see many registrars signing up, not waiting for their renewal date to come along, but signing up immediately. But it would not be all at once, and we would be functioning with 2 different contracts for some period of time.
Okay, thank you. One other thing I want to clarify is that the board approval is a board approval vote that's not governed by our normal, by the bylaws, that we vote on something by 2/3. They would need to have a 2/3 to go against it, correct? That it is not under those conditions?
This is Dan. I think you're right there. This isn't something that came up through the Annex A bylaws, and that what you're referring to is like step 13 of the BDP set forth in the bylaws, which just didn't follow.
Okay. Yeah, I assumed that was the case. I just wanted to confirm that and make sure that was known. Okay, as a last thing before I open up the queue, I wanted to point out that I believe that this vote is one that the first motion is one that should be done by roll call, given its importance and such. And as such, it will be one of the ones that will be open to the absentee vote following the meeting, which is the normal 2-day, the normal absentee vote process. However, and the second motion, which is contingent on that, we will obviously be able to tell whether it has passed or still needs more votes to pass. Should we be in a case where it needs more votes to pass, then obviously the contingent motion would have to wait. At least that's my understanding of how I think we should go about it. I'd like to open the queue at this point to anyone that would like to discuss it.
Alan,
anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Alan.
Sorry, I've got a bit of a cough. Two things. First of all, regarding what Tim just said, my understanding of is if this is a consensus policy as defined, then I thought it comes into effect as soon as it's passed by the board and appropriate notice and process. Why would it wait for up to 5 years for things to be renewed? That's my number one question. I thought that's the whole concept of a consensus policy, is it kicks in once it's passed. I also have a question on the wording of the second motion. I'm not sure if this is the proper time
okay,
to talk
about
it.
Okay, certainly I'd like to ask Tim to ask him. Perhaps we can hold off on the second motion until we get that far.
Okay.
Alan, that's a good question, but I think what we are doing here is we're following the process set forth in the RAA for amending the RAA, and that refers to a consensus process. It is not identical to the consensus policy that you're speaking of. So what this is, we're following exactly how the current contract says it can be amended. And so it is not the same as adopting a full-blown consensus policy, which would have to be limited by the picket fence kind of issues and so forth and so on. This is following the RAA amendment process.
Okay, a follow-on. My understanding, and others I've been talking to, was that if ICANN wants to renegotiate a contract as they come up, that's a matter, a different issue, but the amending the RAA as it stands, I thought, is something that kicks in the middle. I understand it's not the same as the current policy, and the picket fence rules are different and things like that, but I still thought the whole concept was to be able to make a change in the middle of a contract.
Alan, this is Dan. Let me try and take another stab at it.
Okay.
It's true that the council can recommend and the board can adopt a consensus policy on certain limited topics, and then that could be implemented right away on registrars without regard to renewal time. What we're doing here, though, is amending the form of the agreement, and Section 5.4 of the RAA says if ICANN wants to change the form of the agreement for all registrars, the way to do it is to follow the process set forth for adopting a consensus policy. So this vote you're taking and what we've done in proposing these sets of amendments to the RA is not a consensus process. We didn't do it's not a consensus policy process. We didn't do a PDP. What we're doing, though, is following, as we're required to in the RAA, we're following the process we had to follow to impose a consensus policy. We're following that to get approval for these amendments. So we've got this set of amendments. There's 15 of them. And in order to implement them, and this is all following RAA 5.4, the first thing we need is a two-thirds vote from the GNSO recommending that the new form of agreement as amended be adopted. Then it goes to the board. If the board approves it, that becomes the new form of agreement, and we can't force that new form of agreement on any registrars under 5.4 until they come up for renewal. Then they would have to sign the new form, provided it was... The new form was adopted in accordance with the process used to approve consensus policies. So it's a little bit twisted, I grant you, and we tried to make it clear, but it's very, in the big paper, and it's hard to walk through, but hopefully that makes it a little clearer.
Okay,
Mike Rodenbaugh, have a question?
Is that Mike?
So Dan, is there factual information on how many registrars, or Tim, I guess, on how many registrars renewed when? And how many domain names that is?
This is Tim Ruiz. I don't know that number myself. I don't know if Tim Cole or John has a big stab at that or not, but I couldn't tell you, Mike.
Yeah, actually, starting about the middle of this year, our number of renewals is jumping up a little bit because 5 years ago we had a big increase in the number of registrars. So we actually have a significant chunk of them renewing this year, probably 200 or 300. But again, the effective date of this contract would probably be sometime a few months out, so we wouldn't hit all of them. And then next year we also have a fairly large number renewing, so it's not even across the five year span because we had some jumps in growth at different points. But I would imagine that we'd probably get perhaps close to 2/3 of them in the next 2 years.
Thank you. That would actually be an interesting set of. We'll have to see how that would just hit. Anyone else wish to be on the queue to speak? Okay, hearing no one else, at this point, I'd like to call for a vote on the first motion. And I'd like to ask for a roll call vote on that. So if, Glenn, if you could do a roll call vote on the first motion.
Certainly, I will agree.
Yes.
Philip Shepherd.
Abstain.
Okay.
Mark Rodenbaugh?
No.
Saeed Jamil?
No.
Utadeka?
Abstain.
Christina Rosette?
Abstain.
Tony Holmes?
No.
Tony Harris?
No.
Greg Ruth?
No.
Mary Wong, are you on the line? William Drake?
No.
Carlos Souza?
No.
Tim Ruiz?
In favor.
Stefan Van Felder?
Yes.
Jordi Peraguera?
Yes.
Chuck Gomes?
Yes.
Edmund Chun?
Yes.
Terry Davis?
Abstain.
Avery Doria?
Yes.
Olga Cavelli?
Yes.
Okay, from the abstentions, while the tally is as a practice on these votes, we do need to record the reason for the abstention.
Am I the only one having trouble hearing, Aubrey?
Okay, I'm sorry. I've been having problems lately. What I said is on abstentions, as is the practice on roll call calls, we ask to record the reason for the abstention. So if we could go through the abstentions and collect a reason. I think it'd probably be easier, since there were a number of them, Glenn, if you were to give the name of the person.
I'll do that, and I'll ask each one. There are 7 no's, 12 yes, 4 abstentions. Philip, could you give us a reason for your abstention, please?
Yes, we're more concerned about the sequential approach to the RAA changes.
Thank you.
Utadeka, could you please give us the reason?
Sorry, I have to come off mute. Yes, I abstain because of the way how the consultative process has been run, how the input of registrants and users has been largely ignored, and because of the weighted voting that has been granted.
Thank you.
Thank you. Christina Rosette?
Certainly, because contrary to Dr. Toomey's statements in March and June 2007 and the board's June 2007 resolution, the RAA amendment consultative process essentially excluded registrants and users, including brand owners, and ignored their input. Because in addition to that flawed consultative process, the registrar constituency is now being granted weighted voting on whether the amendments should be approved. And finally, because the highly restrictive, narrow, and limited language resulting from that flawed consultative process will render the majority of the purported improvements moot and or unusable.
Thank you.
Thank you. Terry Davis?
I haven't been part of this discussion long enough that I feel I can take a position on this yet. I'm still understanding all of the issues associated.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, at this point, the vote is still open. We will have an absentee ballot.
Aubrey?
Yes.
If I may, I'd just like to say a little bit about my no vote.
Okay, certainly. As soon as I finish on this, and then I'll open the queue. And as we will continue the absentee vote on this as described in the bylaws. Okay, I have Mike. Anyone else wish to speak? Okay, Mike.
So I just believe that we have an alternative, as I've suggested, that I haven't really heard any reason not to do. You know, we could have a fast-track working group to determine which of these proposed amendments truly have consensus of the council. Because, of course, there has not been any consultative process, really, with the council. And those could be adopted immediately. You could also decide which ones could be, you know, reworded, and those could be adopted quickly. At the moment, we don't have consensus, clearly, on this amendment, on package. So, you know, and then there's also a bunch of open issues that aren't mentioned in the package at all that we need assurances will be addressed. So that's the reason for my vote.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else wish to comment at this point? Okay. What's obvious to me is that the second motion, which by its language was contingent upon the previous motion having passed, and while it's still possible that it would pass, it certainly wouldn't pass by two-thirds, so there's certainly no certainty of it passing. I would like to further defer that motion and basically look at, over the next couple weeks, how we as a council want to address the results of this particular vote. Do we want to follow a pattern as was, you know, suggested by Mike? Do we want to look at, you know, a proper PDP in terms of these things? What is the right process for us to follow, to have some advice and discussion with Dan in terms of, given the the non-two-thirds recommendation of the council, what is the possible? In fact, Dan, I mean, if you know at the moment, we talked about what happened if we got the two-thirds. We have not talked about the process if we don't get the two-thirds, and since that seems to be the case at the moment, I'm wondering if you could speak to that at all. And if that's an issue, we can certainly move that to another meeting if that takes time to clarify. Dan? Are you on mute?
Yes, sorry, this is Dan. I think we'll talk about that with policy staff and the services team and get back to the council.
Okay, so I will definitely put this topic on the agenda for next week, and I'd also like to recommend that, you know, we start talking among ourselves about how to, you know, move on the RAA issues going forward. Before I close this topic, is there any other comments people would like to make? Okay. Hearing none, I'll close this at the moment. As I say, we will continue with an absentee ballot so that we have full results. Okay. Moving on to item 6. New GTLD implementation. There was a motion that was tabled last meeting regarding next steps in the new GTLD guidebook issues, and the motion is motion 1, which was made by Chuck and seconded by Tony Harris. Chuck, would you like to speak to your motion now?
Sure, I'll be brief because I think everybody's pretty well aware of what it says. Basically, the resolution makes a change to the GNSO recommendation on new GTLDs that said that the communications period should, which has to be a minimum of 4 months, should start at the once the final RFP is posted. And this motion changes that to start the communications period at when the second draft RFP is posted. It still has to be a minimum of 4 months, but cannot end, the communication period cannot end until at least 30 days after the final RFP is posted. And anybody has any questions, I can talk further about that. I think that's basically the gist of the motion.
And I'd like to point out that, and I'll open up for a second, that we did have a discussion of a proposed friendly amendment that was not accepted. It, of course, can be proposed as a voted-upon amendment should Mike wish to. And at that point, but it hasn't been proposed as such a amendment.
Which friendly amendment are you talking about, Aubrey? Or which amendment?
Well, there is no amendment proposed, but I do believe that Mike had offered a friendly amendment that was not accepted.
I haven't accepted it, but I really haven't rejected it either.
Oh, sorry. I thought you had rejected it, in which case we should probably
talk
about it.
I could be flexible on that.
Sorry for my misunderstanding. I thought it had been rejected.
I did not reject it. I made a statement and asked a question, and I think I indicated that I think it's something I can be flexible on.
Okay. Mike, oh, would you like to speak to your friendly amendment?
Well, just as I said in my email, I don't think it is necessarily factual. I think that public comments, government comments have pointed out that maybe there's some more work that needs to be done, and we shouldn't necessarily be rushing, but I'm personally going to abstain from the motion anyway. I feel conflicted, actually, because I'm involved in business ventures that are actually dependent on the timeline to some extent, although certainly everyone understands it's flexible. So I'm certainly not in favor of inordinate delay, but I think it may be going a little bit too fast.
Okay, thank you. Chuck, Tony, as the motioners and seconder, where are you on this friendly amendment?
I thought that it's easy to change the language, and I'm perfectly comfortable changing the latter half of the statement because I think it is absolutely true that the full GNSO doesn't support the latter half of that statement. And so, Christina's modification I thought was very good. I personally don't care if we totally eliminate the sentence. It's the motion part of it that's more important to me, so the resolution part of it. So I would accept either of those amendments as friendly. I think that.
Could we refresh the exactly what we're going to delete?
Okay, yeah. If somebody tells me exactly what to delete, I will.
But just so we all know what we're talking about when we say, we'll take this out of the proposed.
So it was a whereas clause, Tony. It wasn't part of the resolution.
Is it the one that says considerable delays have been incurred?
Yes.
In the implementation of new GTLDs?
Which I think
and the GNSO wishes to minimize any further delays?
And I think I don't think there's any argument that the first part of that statement is accurate. I'd be curious if people thought differently than that. Again, I don't care if it's dropped out or not. It's the second part that I think I would agree to say that GNSO wishes to minimize any further delays. I don't think that's true of the whole GNSO, and both Mike and Christina are correct on that. So, but again, I'm okay with deleting that whole sentence if it causes heartburn.
Yeah, I agree with that, too.
Okay, so I'm deleting the sentence. Considerable delays have been incurred in the implementation of new GTLDs, and the GNSO wishes to minimize any further delays. Deleting that entire sentence, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, I am about to refresh the motion so that people can see it, and then in which case I'll open up okay. Save. It has been refreshed so people can see it on the wiki. And it's motion one. And so I'd like to open up the queue to discuss this. Is there any discussion? On hearing no discussion, is there any objection to taking a voice vote on this one?
This is Christine. I'd like a roll call vote, please.
Okay, thank you. Glenn, could you do a roll call vote on it?
Yes, certainly, April. Philip Shepherd?
Yes.
What?
Philip Shepherd?
Yes.
Mike Rodenbach?
Abstain.
Saeed Jamil?
Yes.
Uta Deka? Uta? I think she's on mute. Christina Rosette?
No.
Tony Holmes?
Yes.
Tony Harris?
Yes.
Greg Ruth?
Yes.
William Drake?
Yes.
Carlos Souza? Carlos?
Sorry, yes.
Carlos, can you hear me?
Yes, it's yes, sorry.
It's yes. Really? Sorry, yes, I did hear you, thank you. I see Uta has disconnected. Tim Ruiz?
Abstain.
Stefan van Gelder?
Yes.
Jordi?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Edmund?
Yes.
Terry Davis?
Yes.
Avery Doria?
Yes.
Olga Cavelli?
Yes.
Yes. One no and two abstentions.
Okay, as normal, I'd like to ask for those who have abstained to indicate their reason.
Mark Rodenbach?
I've previously stated my reason.
Thank you.
And Tim Ruiz?
A number of reasons. For one, I'm not clear on where we even go from here. So I guess that would be my next question, since it appears it has passed. I'll ask that later. Because we're actually changing the previously approved policy. In fact, setting a timeline that didn't exist before. And then I'm not even sure that that my constituency fully understands what this motion was all about, and even the fact that I'm not even sure. The recent comments, a letter from the Department of Commerce, and the events that have occurred since the first draft have made me rethink. Not whether new GTLDs, whether we support new GTLDs, but whether it's prudent at this time to be shortening or setting a timeline. So that's why I abstained at this point.
Okay, thank you very much.
Adley, can I? Does Uta actually rejoin at the moment of the vote?
Yes, please.
Can you have my vote? No, I voted yes.
You voted yes, so that makes 19 yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay. So that one passes.
Do we need, sorry, Avery, do we need an absentee vote on this?
I don't believe so, because I don't actually believe we're changing a policy, but a implementation recommendation, if I remember correctly.
Thank you.
So it's actually not a policy change that we're recommending, but we're recommending a consideration based on one of the implementation guidelines that we gave. Please correct me, anyone, if I'm wrong on that. Okay, we had one other item under the new GTLD.
This is Tim Aubrey. Can I?
Yes.
Okay, so then the implementation guideline was part of the... Maybe that's...
Right, it was part of the whole policy package with many other things, but it wasn't actually a policy recommendation.
So it isn't part of what the board is actually approving.
It is, and it isn't, but it's always been somewhat confusing in that what weight do the implementation guidelines have in that they are not policy, and our role is to recommend policy. Now they have policy implications, and we're therefore part of the whole package,
there's no expectation. So the understanding of the council then is that we are making a recommendation to the staff that is not certainly, since it's just from us, not through the board. It's not binding. It's just more or less, this is what we'd like to see.
That is certainly my understanding.
Okay.
And I don't know if anyone else wants to comment with a different understanding. Let me take a cue on that if anyone wishes to speak to that. Okay, thank you. I'll move on to the next thing. We had next steps regarding the draft new GTLD guidebook issues, for which staff varied significantly from GNSO recommendations, and some of these were indeed policy recommendations. For example, geographic names, single character IDN names, perhaps other things. Now, we haven't done anything by the deadline. The deadline has essentially gone by. And we talked last time about putting together a drafting team, and a couple of us volunteered, but I don't believe we did anything. So the next step by default is I think we don't do anything further. However, I just didn't want that to be a default that wasn't spoken of, and therefore got it in the agenda, and I'd like to open up the queue to anyone that wants to speak to that issue.
So, this is Tim Aubrey. I'd like in the queue.
Okay, Tim. Anyone else?
Aubrey, did you jump to item 7?
No, I'm still in the second half of 6.
Oh, I got it. Okay, there we go. Right.
Yep,
thank you.
The IDN one was actually intentionally put separate since it's separate. So, Tim, anyone else?
Okay. Mike.
Mike, anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Tim.
Okay, just trying to understand the whole issue just a little bit better. And Anna probably would have helped to maybe go back and do more of a comparison myself between the policy and the implementation proposed by the staff, but I guess what I'm confused about is how that can happen. I mean, if we've made policy recommendations that have been approved by the council, approved by the board, then how through implementation did those get changed? Do we understand that yet, or?
Well, the implementation hasn't been approved yet, and that may be a significant factor. But no, I certainly don't understand, and perhaps others, or perhaps someone from the staff can explain. I certainly don't understand.
Avery, it's Alan. I explicitly asked staff at the last meeting to come back with an explanation for if the board does not have the right to change the details of our policy, how is it that staff does?
Okay, thank you. Thank you for reminding me.
So maybe that's the first step, is just trying to get a clear understanding of what was behind this, or how did this happen?
Somebody is near their mobile phone. Sorry, somebody was very close to their mobile phone. Okay, yes. Thank you, Alan, for reminding me of that. And apologies for not having followed up on that to see if we were ready with such an answer. Is there anyone from the staff who is ready for that sort of answer? Anyone from the implementation or policy staff able to offer an answer at this point?
This is Denise, and my apologies. I should have mentioned this at the beginning of the call. Kurt Pritz had a personal commitment at this time that was unavoidable, and he is unable to be on the call. But I know this is a question and issue area that Kurt would like to address, and I'll convey this to him, and he'll be following up with the council.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to also ask, though, from the legal counsel perspective, how basically these things mesh between the policy recommendations made by the GNSO, approved by the board, and the implementation, where that is seen from their perspective.
Aubrey, this is Dan. I guess I would best allow Kurt to comment, but I'm guessing. I don't want to guess what he'd say, but that all staff has done basically at this point is written a draft and invited comment on it. We haven't done anything. The board hasn't done anything. You know, we took on the recommendations and listened to lots of other things going on and came up with our best stab at how it could be implemented. And if there's concerns about it, including concerns that it's not in line with what the GNSO recommended, then I think the first step is to get the comments in, and what we're doing right now is, you know, we've got I don't know, over 1,000 pages of comment, and we're working on them, digesting them, seeing where changes need to be made in the process, including comments like this. So I think comment's the first stage, and nothing has, you know, no action has been taken except the posting of a draft, which the purpose of was to invite comment to see if we got it right. So I think Kirk could give an definitive comment on that, but I'm guessing that's what he said.
Okay, thank you.
If I could perhaps see it as a two-step question, because the first question is whether those examples are really at odds with the recommendations. That's the first. And, well, in one case, when it comes to, for example, two-character IBM names, I don't see the recommendations as such as being contrary to those. Well, that's my little perception of it. So that's the first. Now, the second, okay, if it is at odds with the recommendation, then what?
Aubrey, please add me to the queue.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I think we've covered Tim's question, and we have Mike next, and then Jack.
I had very similar questions to Tim, Dan, and Olaf. I think both gave a great response, and that was going to be my suggestion as well, Olaf, is that we should, you know, have the opportunity to identify where we think the staff has misinterpreted our recommendations or ignored them or whatever, and then we as a council ought to discuss those and what to do next. Oh, I know one in particular is the definition of confusion, likelihood of confusion kind of jumps around in the draft document, where I think the council is quite clear throughout about that.
May I respond to that?
Yes, please.
Right, because I mean now we have two processes for dealing with confusing similarities. One is the objection procedure, and that's where a wide interpretation is quite certainly possible. What we try to do is to make something doable and implementable. And I tell you, already dealing with visual similarity is a very, very tall order indeed. So, well, that's where we try to meet the recommendation, but try to give it up in what we do for everything, and where there are other possibilities, notably objection procedure. So I think that's what we've tried to do, or at least that's what I tried, what I think we have tried to do.
Okay, thank you.
This is Tim. I went back in the queue, though.
Okay, thank you.
And Alan.
And Alan, okay. Chuck.
Yeah, before I get to my main points, a couple of responses to, and maybe a clarification question of Olaf. First of all, with regard to confusing similarity, the GNSO recommendation definitely involved more than visual similarity. I think we need to be very clear on that. It is, I agree, that in the dispute process, the objection process, the broader definition of confusing similarity was used.
Deze oproep is onderbroken.
In the algorithm, it's strictly limited to
this call.
Visual similarity. So certainly I don't think that the GNSO recommendation is fulfilled by that. But it is fulfilled in the objection process. Now, on a different clarification area, Olaf, did I understand you in your first response to, I think, Tim's question, to say that you thought that the GNSO, that the implementation plan did not differ from the GNSO recommendations with regard to two-character IDNs?
I'm at a loss and seeing that.
Well, first of all, the Reserved Names Working Group, which then the work became part of the GNSO recommendations, definitely recommended, and the council later endorsed, that in the case of IDN names, that the restriction on single and two-character IDN names should be different than for ASCII names. And we said that should be looked at on a case-by-case basis. And the reason is, as some of the public comments have pointed out, by a variety of people, by the way, that in Chinese, Japanese, and Korean, I think, and Edmund can help me out here, the single, if you eliminate single and two-character, it actually can end up creating more confusion and eliminating some very valid names. And so I don't believe by restricting IDN names to three characters or more that it is at all consistent with what the GNSO recommended. Edmund, and maybe Aubrey, would it be appropriate for Edmund to comment on that?
Could I
address? Sure, go ahead, Ola.
Well, first of all, in substance, you're perfectly right. And I think the concern we've had is really the confusability risk with the ISO 3166 Latin code list, which pertains to some particular scripts, notably Cyrillic and Greek in particular, perhaps others as well. So, well, I do accept in substance that what you say is a very valid comment, and I think we've received such comments as well. What I wish to say is rather that when you look at the recommendations, the core recommendations, I don't see that this particular measure goes against those. Well, we have had a number of ancillary working groups like the IDN working group and others which were annexed to the final report and part of it. And of course the implementation guidelines were such as well. And I do think when I mentioned recommendations, I intended the core recommendations, and that's really what we tried to follow to the letter.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, and part of those core recommendations were reserved names.
In among the 19.
This is Patrick. I did in the queue on this.
Did you want to comment on this particular issue?
Yes, I did, actually.
Okay, please, Patrick.
Chuck, I definitely hear this comment that you're making, and this is one that we've heard from a number of people. I think, as Dan mentioned, this is an area where, because of the comments that have been received, that this might be or is likely to be an area that will be modified in the next version of the applicant guidebook. Reserved names definitely were part of the work that staff reviewed as part of the implementation material, so it wasn't something that was overlooked, and I'm sure that if Kurt or even Tina Dam was available for this call, that it could explain the reasoning for the recommendation that was in the guidebook.
Yeah, and I understand that more consideration would be given to this. I'm not looking for a solution right now. I just thought I had heard Olaf say that there wasn't a deviation from the GNSO recommendations, and I think that there was. Now, we can work together to see how best to deal with the concerns on all sides, not just the position I suggested. I don't think, Aubrey, we need to spend any more
time
on that.
Right, and that's one of the things that I have to my, people in the queue.
Yeah, my main, I didn't even get to my main reason for talking. The biggest area of divergence in the recommendations is in geographic names. Huge divergence there. Basically, the implementation plan did what the GAC wanted, not what the GNSO recommended. And again, the public comments have adequately addressed that from lots of sources. I think, as most people know, I'm actually one of those that's supportive with regard to country names of doing different than the GNSO recommended, at least until the IDN PDP is finished. I think that makes a lot of sense, personally. But the implementation plan goes well beyond that, and this is one of those that is the most obvious in terms of divergence from GNSO recommendations. And I just ask the questions, I mean, do we want to, as a council, address that? Do we want to maybe come up with a compromise position where, yeah, we can go along with the country names, but do we want to extend it to continents and cities and everything else in terms of that? That's a huge leap.
And thank you. And I've got two more people on the list, but I wanted to really bring this back to not discussing the particular issues now, other than it was good to see that there are some issues that need further discussion, but to really bring it back to what are our next steps. We've identified there's some issues, but I have two people. So, Tim? Are you on mute?
Sorry, I was on mute. It seems to me the next the way forward would be to trust to consolidate where we feel the implementation plan differs significantly from the recommendations, so it's clear what our feeling is on that regard, and give the staff an opportunity to respond to that with why they feel that's not true or why that it had to differ, and there may be some good reasons for it. I don't know. It's something we need to look at, and then from there we can decide on next steps. But right now, it doesn't seem like there's been any real clear picture that we've given to the staff as to where things differ, and we don't have a clear picture from them as to why that's the case or why they feel it may not be. And that seems to be what we need to get in place first.
Yeah, that seems a good idea. Alan?
Yeah, just a very quick philosophical statement. And it comes down to the whole reason for the GNSO is to set policy to be ratified by the board. Although I understand that in this case the onus is on us to look for places where staff may have misinterpreted, I think there's something broken in the fact that places where staff knew they were changing, they did not come back to us as part of the process. Say, this, and this we believe cannot be implemented. Let's iterate and see if GNSO can recommend new policy to be accepted by the board. Otherwise, it's a game of can we guess where they made changes, and I think that's a broken process.
Thank you. What I'd like to recommend, I don't know if anyone else wants to comment, what I'd like to recommend is that we should schedule, just from the starting of this conversation, it looked like a whole meeting's worth of conversation could happen on this. So I'd like to suggest that we schedule a meeting in the next couple weeks to basically talk through these issues and recommend that those who believe that there are places where there are inconsistencies or deviations make them explicit, and perhaps following up on what Alan suggested, if the staff knows of places where they said, hey, the recommendation just can't be implemented the way it's written because of the following, that they highlight those so that we can go into this with a reasonable conversation. I'd like to know if people think that that's a reasonable idea or anybody thinks that it's overkill, it's something we shouldn't do, or what have you.
Sounds good.
Okay, does anybody think it's a bad idea to, this would be similar to, you know, it wouldn't be a decision-making meeting, but it would be a meeting open to, you know, again, to all council members and probably to alternates for council members who couldn't make it, sort of as we've been doing with trying to resolve the who is, you know, studies conundrum. We can do this meeting that way. Does that seem a reasonable approach to people? Anybody think that's an unreasonable approach? Okay, then I'll ask Glenn to help schedule such a meeting with all the fun that always is, but to get one of those going with the staff, make sure that we have it at a time when, you know, the appropriate staff members can make it. Anyone else like to add another comment to this before we go on, so we have to find the next step? If not, I'd like to move on to item 7, which is still a GTLD issue, but it's specifically dealing with IDN deployment. There's a motion that was put on the table at the last meeting and was tabled until this meeting. And the motion is, okay, let me go to the motion. The motion was made by Chuck and seconded by Adrian. And Chuck, would you like to speak to it?
Sure. I think this motion is consistent with positions that the GNSO has taken several times before, including our response to the IDNC work and so forth. One of the things that's in the GTLD guidebook is a statement that the new GTLD process should be self-funding and shouldn't be subsidized by any other ICANN activity. So the second part of this of the number two part of the resolution really just kind of says the same thing with regard to IDN CCTLDs. It also addresses the fact of timing of IDN GTLDs getting in the root. I think most of us believe, and a lot of in the GNSO are supporting more time for GTLDs to resolve a lot of the issues and a lot of the good constructive feedback that has been submitted in the comment period. One of the problems with that, with regard to IDN GTLDs, is that I think it's pretty safe to say that whichever IDN TLDs go into the root first, they're going to have a huge competitive advantage, and so this is a means to try and close that gap and say that we think that hey, they should go in the root at the same time. Now, what does that translate into? I think, you know, maybe then we consider, like a lot of the public comments have said on the guidebook, that maybe there's something like a fast-track IDN GTLD rollout, or, you know, some have said the, you know, sponsored or community-based TLDs and so forth as well in their comments. This particular motion deals just with the IDN TLDs, both on the CC side and the G side. So it basically, the first part just says that neither one should go in the root before the other, and the second part of it basically says that there should be an enforceable commitment for IDN CC, fast-track CCTLDs to follow IDN guidelines, IDN standards, security and stability requirements, and as well that they should be self-funding and not subsidized by other ICANN entities.
Okay, thank you. I want to ask one clarifying question and then open the queue. And the clarifying question is, in that first one where it says they do not go in the root before the other, speaks not at all to whether delegations could be made and so on and so forth.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to open the queue to discussion. Are there...
This Edmund.
Edmund, okay. Anyone else? Okay, one other thing I wanted to clarify, Chuck. There's an edits pending in the motion. There are no edits pending?
Well, in our last call, a couple people, and I apologize, I can't remember who they were, but had said that there was some wording that they would have made a little bit differently, and I thought that those people were going to put that wording forward as just friendly amendments, but I haven't seen any, so maybe there aren't. I don't know.
Okay, thank you. So I had Edmund. Who else after Edmund? I heard someone while I was over speaking.
Mike.
Okay, anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Edmund.
Yeah, I just have one friendly amendment I want to propose, which is to, on number two in the last few words, as GTLDs must do, to strike that out, because I think
it may come across a little bit better with the sensitivity that we understand that DCTLDs and GTLDs are significantly different, but on, you know, because we already explicitly stated two items, I think that a few words are probably unnecessary at that point.
And I would accept that as friendly.
Okay, and that is specifically... Which wording are you specifically striking, please?
In the resolve, Arabic numeral 2 there, the very last four words, just before the colon. As GTLDs must do.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Okay. That's done. I will save it so people can see it. Mike.
Okay, well, just now that you delete that, minimal security and stability requirements is really, really vague. Where it said, as GTLDs must do, that was more or less a definition. Would you be good with minimal security and stability requirements as contained in GTLD registry contracts or something like that?
That would be okay with me. I'm not fixed to the word minimal either. The idea was that that one of the most important things is security and stability requirements, and those should apply to all TLDs.
I'd certainly like to delete minimal as well. So how about security and stability requirements as contained in GTLD registry contracts?
That's okay with me.
As contained in GTLD registry contracts. And then comma, IDN guidelines and IDN standards. And were you removing the word minimal?
Yes.
And that was okay with you also, Chuck?
That's fine.
Okay.
Is it just a suggestion, rather than making as such, do we add such as, rather than making it, you know, sort of
such
equivalent
as those
to... Yeah. The reason of which would be that, again, the same argument that we should be somewhat sensitive that GTLDs and CCTLDs, at least from the point of view of CCTLDs, they view it as significantly different. But on this particular topic, I think it's fine in the security and stability part to use the GTLD word, but it would come across better if we say something like such as rather than, you know,
okay,
exactly
so
as.
That would read, and I want to see if it's acceptable, following security and stability requirements such as those contained in GTLD registry requirements, IDN guidelines, and IDN standards.
Registry agreements, not requirements.
Contracts, actually, I had. I don't know what I said.
Whatever, yeah.
But,
okay.
Sorry, I have written, and I will save it.
Okay.
Is that acceptable to you?
Is that okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I have saved it again, so people should be able to see it. Any other discussion on this? Okay. Is there any objection to a voice vote on this one?
I would prefer not to have a voice vote.
And others would prefer a roll call?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Glenn, could you do a roll call on this?
Yes, certainly, Avery. Philip Shepherd?
Yes.
Mike Rodenbach?
Yes.
Zaid Jamil?
Yes.
Uta Decker?
Yes.
Christina Rosette?
No.
Tony Holmes?
No.
Tony Harris?
No.
Greg Ruth?
No.
William Drake?
Yes.
Carlos Souza?
No.
Tim Ruiz?
Yes.
Stefan Van Gelder?
Yes.
Jody Paraguira?
Yes.
Chuck Gomes?
Yes.
Edmund Chan?
Yes.
Terry Davis?
No.
Avery Doria?
Yes.
Olga Cavelli?
Yes.
Seventeen, yes. Five, no.
Okay, thank you. So,
Yeah, this is Carlos.
Yeah?
Yeah, just to ask if it's possible, sorry about that, but I really messed up here my vote, and I said no, and I meant yes. Is it possible to change?
Is there any objection to a vote being amended at this point?
Sorry about that. It was just a confusion. I was taking a look at the agenda, and so.
Thank you. If there's no objection to the vote being amended at this point, please amend his vote.
So we are amending the vote of Carlos Souza from no to yes.
Yes, to be consistent with the other positions, okay?
Okay, thank you. So that gives us 25 and 4 again. So that's
17, 18.
So that's actually a two-thirds. Okay, thank you. So I will pass that motion on. Okay. That brings us to the next item on the agenda, which is GNSO Improvements Operations Steering Committee Charter Approval. As most of you probably remember, when we approved the original charters, there was the understanding that the steering committees would then meet, and if they wanted to nor felt the need to amend those charters, it was open for them to do so, but then that the council needed to approve those. So therefore there is a motion, and I will ask Chuck, who is the person who made the motion and who I believe is also the chair of the OSC, to discuss both the motion and the changes made.
Okay. Do you want me to read the motion, Aubrey?
That's probably a good idea, since that one's never been read before.
Whereas the GNSO Council reviewed and accepted the new GNSO Improvement Implementation Plan developed by the planning team at its 16 October meeting, and whereas that plan called for the creation of an Operations Steering Committee to oversee efforts to enhance the GNSO structure, constituencies, and communications, whereas the OSC was formed and held 5 teleconference meetings and conducted various online discussions as of 30 December 2008, and whereas the OSC reviewed and modified the draft OSC charter prepared by the GNSO Improvement Planning Team and recommends that the Council approve the revised draft charter dated 22 December 08 and contained at the committee's wiki site at, and you can see the URL there, resolve the GNSO Council approves the OSC charter and directs the OSC to proceed in fulfilling the terms of that charter.
Okay, thank you. Did you want to discuss at all the changes, so people had a chance to see the changes in the charter? I mean, it's been available. Were there any of those changes substantive?
Not very substantive. We did some things, like, for example, we included the idea of interim chairs for the work teams that will be created, and we identified a interim chair for each of the three work teams under the OSC, and those are members of the OSC. The intent is not at all that those people would be
the ongoing chairs. In fact, I'm not sure that any of them would even be willing to do that. The work teams that are created will elect their own chair. There are others on the call that were on the OSC. Are there any changes that were significant that I missed? We did things like we added some work rules, working rules that we have typically used in the GNSO for working groups. We added, thanks to the work of the PTSC, statement of interest, that people would submit statement of interest. Some of the changes were just formatting and clarity. It maintains the focus that where the real work's going to be done is the work teams, not at the steering committee level, and the steering committee's role is one of coordination of the three work teams, and then they will come back to the steering committee, and the steering committee will provide any guidance or feedback and ultimately pass the implementation plan recommendations on to the council.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to open up the queue.
This is Rob. I'd like to have.
Okay, Rob.
And Tim.
Mike. Okay, go on. I'll rock.
Thank you. Just one extra item. Chuck had asked if anyone else wanted to add one, and that was the one substantive membership change that was adopted by the committee was the addition of members to the steering committee in the person of the chairs of the various work teams. And that change was made to improve internal operational efficiency so that there would be an easier exchange of information between work teams and the committee.
Okay, thank
you. Thanks, Rob.
Tim.
Questions. One is just on what Rob was just commenting on, and that is that changing the membership of the team, that is, but that we can just do that as part of the charter. I mean, there isn't any separate action required, given that the recommendations were pretty specific about the membership. There's no issue with just changing that as part of within the charter. And
I think that's one of the reasons it requires the council to approve charter changes.
Okay, and then. So just another process question. My substantive question is in regards to the work team rules. And I had commented back to the PPSC list. I don't know if Chuck had seen it there or not. I didn't send anything to Chuck separately or to the OSC list. I'm not sure I could. But in the work team rules, there's two things that concern me under the decision-making. And in, particularly in the second paragraph of that is about producing the work team report. It's about four bullet points that need to be included in the report. But I think it also should include the names and affiliations of those in support of the position. And if those in support are actually representing the constituency, and I think it should also include whether their support represents the consensus view of their constituency or not. And personally, I feel that's necessary information to be able to evaluate the rough consensus of the group. So that's one comment. And I think the way I put it is I added a sentence or suggested a sentence be added following those four bullet points that just says, in all cases, the chair will include the names and affiliations of those in support of each position, and for participants of constituency representatives, will indicate if their support represents a consensus view of their constituency. So that was one suggestion. And then the other is in the very next sentence after those four bullet points in the existing copy says, if several participants and a work team disagrees with the designation given to the position by the chair or other representative call that the staff. I one is, I think that's a bit ambiguous, because now what does several participants mean? Is that two, or is it three, or how many? But personally, I think that it should be, if any participant in a work team disagrees, then they should have that opportunity to follow those steps. Especially given that there's other mechanisms in place to deal with participants who are seen to just cause trouble or trying to make waves. But if a legitimate participant disagrees or has a problem with the rough consensus call, they should be able to follow those steps. So those are the two changes that I suggest.
Okay, thank you. Of course, I think those changes would need to go back to the steering group for consideration. Mike?
Just a quick question. In the membership of the OSC, it says council chair and or vice chair. Is that supposed to mean or vice chair, or what's the intent there?
Yeah.
That was a carryover from the original draft charter. I think it's worded as it was originally presented, and we never did change that. Obviously, we have elected to make that an or, so that we spread the workload out a little bit.
In fact, what we actually did was we did it as an or, and in each of the two steering groups made the other one the alternate.
Okay, so the intention is just one of you will be on.
One of us is on one, and it probably should be or, and perhaps in both of the committees we should consider, and the other X as alternate or something like that. But it has been treated as an or by both of us, but perhaps it should be clarified.
Okay.
In both.
There's no implication that either that. For example, on the PPSC, Aubrey is listed as the primary for the chair and as the NCA, but there's no intention that she's representing two representatives, or two participants, just one.
Right, and in fact, one of the things that was discussed in the planning team, and I'm not sure, I don't remember at the moment to what extent it made it in the final document, was that as much as possible, and I don't know that it was made a strict rule, that the chair coming out of either one of the constituencies or out of the NCA pool, that you shouldn't have another one of them, that you shouldn't have another one from that constituency. Certainly you have another one that's the alternate. But, and of course we hadn't even thought of alternates when we put together the original plan. So it is evolving. But I think there's certainly been an intention that, there wouldn't be another NCA except as alternate in the group I was in, and there wouldn't be another registry except as an alternate in the one Chuck was in. And I think we followed that pattern also.
Well, and in the case of the OSC, the way we worked it is because they elected me as chair, I am serving as chair and not representing the registry constituency. So we have representative and an alternate from the registry constituency, just like the other groups.
Okay. So, and each of the groups, it is kind of interesting, each of the groups is, and this is, I didn't put myself on the list, but putting myself, each of the groups is sort of evolving its own character, which I think is good, but also I'm very grateful to the staff members who are sort of paying attention to both and coming and saying, you might consider doing what the OSC did here and in the PPSC, in the OSC it sounds like they've picked up something from the PPSC, so I think that's great. One of the things, what I would recommend now, and I want to see if there's acceptance of this, and then go with the queue, being open for further comment, is that since there have been some substantive recommendations for changes to the charter, basically would like to ask Chuck to take those back to the OSC, see if those changes are acceptable, and bring the charter motion back at the next meeting. And I'd like to get comment on whether that's an acceptable way to proceed.
From
my point of view as the chair of the OSC, I'm perfectly comfortable with that. I would just ask that Tim and Mike send me an email with the details so that I can be very specific.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else like to speak to this topic at the moment? Okay, then in which case this motion will be tabled until the next meeting, at which point there will be a revision, and I especially ask Tim and Mike to take a look at, basically to you know, send Chuck the language and to make sure that you take a look at the language before the next meeting, make sure that, you know, you're comfortable. And if there's any, you know, interaction and you know, further iteration, perhaps that can actually happen offline before we get to the next meeting.
And anyone else is welcome to send suggested changes. So.
Okay, any other issues on item 8 here on the OSC? Okay, as I said, item 9 was removed. I'd like to move to item 10, which is the status updates, and start with the board update with Denise, though I'm not sure the board has met since we last met.
Avery?
Yes.
It's Christina. I apologize for interrupting, but I see that we've recently gotten an email regarding the travel policy.
That one's on the list.
Yeah, I was wondering whether maybe we could bump that up to first, given some of the deadlines that the constituencies are operating under, and at least my reading of the email suggests that the per-constituency basis is going to be
tweaked. I certainly, you know, if no one else objects, Denise, would you like to speak to that before getting into the board update?
Sure.
Thank
I'm
you.
Happy to. Kevin Wilson, our COO, sent an email to the GNSO and CCNSO regarding implementation of the travel guidelines for the ICANN Mexico City meeting. And many of you may not have seen it. I'll just quickly review the deadlines and some important information for you. The deadlines for ICANN-funded travel to the Mexico City meeting include January 22nd. Staff needs just a list of travelers who are to receive travel support under the travel guidelines by that date. And then by January 28th, we'll need to lock in both the hotel room bookings and the flight bookings. An important change from Cairo for the travel guidelines is that, as has been requested by some in the GNSO in particular, ICANN will be able to split travel support among two people, that is, instead of just one person receiving both hotel and airfare support from ICANN, one person can receive hotel support only and another person can receive only airfare support, and together that would be the equivalent of one funded traveler.
Can I ask a question on the clarifying on that before you go on? You said one would get the airfare and one would get the hotel. There was also the per diem part. Would that be attached to the hotel, or is that a third split?
That would need to be attached to one of them.
That's attached. Oh, it could be attached to either.
I think so, but let me clarify that with Kevin again. This isn't a
an
item I'm in charge of, but I'm happy to have Kevin follow up on that question.
Okay, sorry, I didn't. Sorry to interrupt.
Avery, this is Stefan here. Can I interrupt while you're interrupting?
Okay, go ahead.
Just another question linked with what you were just saying. It says that there are 13. You're expecting 13 names from the GNSO. Is there any idea of how we're supposed to split that within the constituencies? If you detract the non-com reps, that doesn't come to an even number.
Now, this is an email from Kevin Wilson, and I'm happy to collect any questions and get them to him so he can follow up. But in his email, there's a link to the community travel support procedures, which provides more information on this. And when those were issued last year, each SO was asked to develop a proposed way of allocating this travel funding. So it's with the GNSO to agree upon how they want to allocate this travel support and let ICANN staff know. So it's not for ICANN staff to decide how the 13 slots will be divided up, but rather the GNSO needs to come to a decision and let us know.
But if I can comment there, Denise, the parameters that we've been given, depending on how many constituencies there are, make it extremely difficult to divvy it up equally.
Yeah, yes. Can I speak to this? It's Tony Harris.
I'd actually like to take a cue at this point so that we can get. So I've got Tony.
It's Christina. If you could put me in, please.
Christina, anyone else?
About Tim, please.
Tim, anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Tony.
No, I think a good point is being made. If you do the math and you take the three NOMCOM appointees, one of which is the chair, you're left with 10 travelers to be funded and 6 constituencies. I think that's probably the math by my calculations. So it's probably difficult to divide it up equally.
I can offer one comment, which, of course, if the number of constituencies change, the math changes. But one of the things that is contained in the travel policy is that people can carry over from one meeting to another. So if you took 3 meetings, that 10 becomes 30, which then becomes divisible by 6, giving 5 slots, 5 traveler equivalents, since we're now talking about being able to split it, but give 5 traveler equivalents to each of the constituencies per fiscal year. Now, if we change the number,
but everything changes at the middle of the year,
right? And then, and so that makes it confusing. But yes, that. But that is one factor, that is one degree of freedom there is in the thinking, is thinking in terms of years, or in this case, thinking in terms of 2 meetings.
And we're not talking about 10 slots. We're talking about 20 possible funding opportunities because it can now be split.
Right. That's what I was speaking of, traveler equivalents. But anyhow, okay, thank you, Tony. Christina.
Just a clarifying question. I had thought that the non-com appointees to the council were funded for travel to the meetings. Is that not right?
They're funded out of the 13.
Oh.
And they hold permanent slots. We hold permanent slots as 3.
Oh, okay.
We're 3 of the traveler equivalents out of the 13 slots, but it is contained in the whole calculation.
Okay, all right. I think as a practical matter, given the deadline, I think we're going to have to come up with something very simple, very clean, for one-off use for the purpose of Mexico City. I mean, I just don't see that we have any other options. I personally am not going to have a whole lot of time to be on the phone with everyone in the next 2 weeks trying to figure out how to figure it out.
This is Stefan here. That is kind of the point that I was making, and the answer given doesn't really help, to be honest. What do we, RC reps, say to our constituency? We just use one slot here and keep one, move it forward for the next meeting, or do we try and use 2 slots here? It's kind of complicated in such a short time scale to really know what to do. It'd certainly be appreciated to have some clear indication of what we should do.
Yeah, well, this is something, and I have Tim on the list next. Now, this is something that the drafting team has been wrestling with for a while. One of the things that the drafting team did make sort of clear, though, I thought, was that they wanted this to be a constituency issue and not a council issue. So I'm not really sure where we go. Tim?
Yeah, first, a comment about splitting this up, and it's a question perhaps for Denise or for staff, I guess. I think, again, we don't have, it's not like we have to take 10 spots and split it up among 6 constituencies. We have 20 funding possibilities, which, when split up among the 6 constituencies, could, for example, create three funding opportunities. So maybe, you know, that's one full traveler, and then a constituency would get airfare for another or hotel for another or something of that nature that we could work out for this time. And then, you know, we look at that probably on a one-off basis as we go forward until we have something that we can apply consistently in place. But probably always need to be revisable as constituencies change or stakeholder group model comes into play and things change there. So I think there's probably more opportunity for funding now that it's split, and we should be appreciative of that, I think, and would like to thank the staff for being able to work that out. So the other question I had, though, is is this, if someone was to receive funding, can they make their own arrangements and then just apply for the per diem later, or do the arrangements have to be made through staff and through staff travel agents?
Denise, I think that's a question for you.
Sure. Yes, the arrangements do need to be made through the travel support, unless specific arrangements are made, unless there's some extenuating circumstance. There's a travel support email that's provided in Kevin's email for inquiries such as those. And also, while I've got the floor, I also want to let you know that Jen Brandt, our COO, and Kevin Wilson will be holding a public discussion about the travel guidelines in Mexico City to get your thoughts and feedback on how the guidelines are being implemented thus far and any potential changes that might be needed for the next fiscal year. And of course, they're very well aware of the changes and fluid nature of the GNSO over the next several months, and are open to suggestions on how to make sure that the travel guidelines meet the GNSO's changing needs.
Okay, so if anyone else wishes to be in the queue at this point.
Aubrey, can you put me in after Philip again, please?
Okay. Anyone else?
Mike.
Anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Philip.
Thanks. I'm sorry, but I think all of us on council are being extraordinarily and inappropriately polite at the moment. We've had lots of discussion about this. I think most of us feel that the policy proposed is inappropriate, mean, and ill thought through. We indicated that directly to Doug Brent in Cairo. We don't need no discussion with him. It is precisely how we feel about this. And it is absurd that we're wasting time struggling to do some ridiculous math that somehow got to be passed by our staff or so for a travel policy that is fundamentally flawed. And I'm increasingly angry that I'm being asked to spend my volunteer time thinking about this as something that is trivially easy, to which you propose very simple solutions. If staff are now forced by senior management decisions in terms of how they need to implement a flawed policy in Mexico City, the answer is very simple. Come back to us with an email tomorrow saying, per constituency, this is the amount of dollars we're going to give you, spend it how you like, claim it how you like, just make sure you give us evidence you actually turned up at Mexico City. End of story. That's all we need to do. Let's keep it very simple, and let's not carry on messing around, wasting our own volunteer time on a system that is fundamentally flawed, stupidly thought through, and makes me very angry the fact that we need to waste more time on this.
Okay, thank you.
This is Tim.
Okay, I'll add you to the queue. Christina.
I completely agree with everything Philip just said, but in the interest of making sure that there's some opportunities for funding that are actually utilized, I would suggest that we go with the proposal that each constituency, you know, Tim's calculations, that each constituency gets three slots, whether they do that as one full person, three partial funded, however, and that we just keep the remaining two slots in reserve for the next meeting.
Well, it's 20 slots for
two meetings, right? For Mexico City and Sydney?
20 full-time traveler equivalents, or 40 partials. But yeah, and you got to make sure you got your mix right. You can't have too many planes and not enough hotels. But I'm actually going to suggest that the drafting team that's been concerned with this will be the one that sort of take this issue of how to subdivide and work out the maps and the details, as opposed to us doing it here. I've got Mike next.
I agree with Philip. This is a waste of time. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Tim.
I agree with Philip to a point, because, you know, as the registrar has said before, we don't think anybody should be funded other than perhaps the MCA. So there's always that option. If this is too complicated, the staff can just, you know, as far as work is concerned, take it all back, and we'll just figure it out better. We'll all just fund ourselves. I don't think that's really the route to go, and so for this particular time, that's what, as Aubrey suggested, the drafting team pick up the problem. Those on the drafting team that don't want to deal with it anymore can exit, and let's just get this thing figured out for now and move forward.
The other thing I would add is, if there's anyone not on the drafting team that wants to contribute to this math problem for this time, should get involved. And obviously there should be someone from each of the constituency on that. I haven't been part of that team or paying attention, just to make sure that whatever is done with the with the by your leave and agreement of all the constituencies. Olga, are you still the coordinator or chair of that group?
Yes, I'm still.
So you're willing to take this task on in terms of working out the math with your team?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Is there any objection to doing that?
Avery, this is Stefan.
Okay, yes, Stefan.
And Alan.
I just want to say that I'm happy to volunteer to help the drafting team.
Okay, great, thanks. So Olga, make sure that Stefan is among your number. Yes, Alan. And by the way, it was made clear that you're covered under ALAC.
I'm not looking for money. My only comment was the drafting team, it would be nice if they got some input from staff on what the rules are, what the parameters are going to be for the June meeting, which will be under the stakeholder group regime, presumably, and not constituencies.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, though I do think that solving Mexico City in the next 2 weeks probably has
to
have priority.
I'm just saying that what the draft team working on the next
right.
go-around,
oh, yeah, yeah.
since the issue of carryover may not be quite clearly understood, that should be one of the things they should get from staff.
Okay,
and Aubrey, that was my point when I was saying there's the 20 slots for Tim's suggestion were for two meetings, not for just Mexico City.
I understand. Thank you.
Yeah.
We probably won't have new constituencies by then, so as long as we're staying in a constituency basis, we'll probably stay for two meetings.
Can I just ask one more question, Stefan, again? Sorry.
Yes, please.
Just to ask staff if there's any possibility just to help the drafting team along, or to just give them more time. Is there any possibility to have those deadlines put back just a bit?
This is Denise. No. The hotel contracts expire and the rooms will be released, and that's the real driving point. My understanding is for these deadlines, so I think they may be able to slip a day. Let me check. We lose all of the rooms the 30th of January.
Denise, I thought that, and perhaps it's something to be checked on, I thought that what was being done provisionally was saying there will be 13 hotel rooms used. We just don't know the names for those rooms yet.
Right, and so not to bore you all with the details, but my understanding is that we have a general contract that holds a set number of rooms, but then there's a clause in there where we have a deadline to use or lose the rooms. That is, individuals need to be assigned and rooms need to be paid for by January 30th, and if that doesn't occur, then I can, then the rooms will be released. We do this on a large scale, and this is a way for ICANN to just pay for the rooms that are actually used and needed. So January 30th is when we lose all the rooms.
Okay, thank you. Leaving that one there, and I know the drafting team has quite an issue on its hands, I'd like to move on to the board update.
Sure. This is Denise, and I have no. There have been no board meetings since my last report to the council, where I outlined the board's actions at their 11 December meeting. The preliminary notes of that meeting are on the website, and just to run through that 11 December board agenda very quickly again. They had an update and discussion on new GPLD implementation issues, the same for the upcoming strategic plan. They had a report on the IGF in Hyderabad, a report on the U.S. election results and transition discussions. They received an update on the at-large summit plan for Mexico City and an update on GNSO improvements and implementation. And they discussed the role of individual users in the GNSO, and they approved a resolution. I'll read it quickly. It's on the website. Whereas the board has received varying recommendations on registrants and user involvement in the GNSO, the issue of how to incorporate the legitimate interests of individual Internet users in constructive yet non-duplicative ways remains an open issue that affects GNSO restructuring. Resolved, the board requests that members of the GNSO community work with members of the ALEC / at-large community and representatives of potential new non-commercial constituencies to jointly develop a recommendation for the composition and organizational structure of a non-commercial stakeholder group that does not duplicate the ALAC and its supporting structures, yet ensures that the GPLD interests of individual Internet users, along with the broader non-commercial community, are effectively represented within the GNSO. This recommendation should be submitted no later than 24 January for consideration by the board. The next board meeting is scheduled for the 3rd of February, and the agenda should be posted online about 10 days before the meeting actually occurs.
Right. We have actually not done anything with the ALAC on that yet.
Yeah, and as is obvious, I think, from the resolution, the board was particularly mindful of the importance of moving this discussion forward for the new non-commercial stakeholder group that needs to be formed, and obviously their resolution focuses on
involved in that. Mm-hmm. I'll have to contact the chair of the ALAC and see where we go from there, but we may end up having to ask for an extension on that.
And they've been, I know there have been discussions that have occurred already on this topic between members of the at-large community and I think the NCUC and others. And also I just wanted to bring to your attention, there's an announcement on the homepage that we've posted that gives people just a general update and an encouragement to be involved in the variety of activities surrounding GNSO improvements, and also foreshadows the announcement that we're expecting the GNSO to post with more information on the working teams and how people can join them as well.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions? Okay, moving on. Okay, we covered travel policy. We had an item. Is there any update on the post-expiration domain name recovery issue? I don't think there is. Okay, on drafting teams, on who is? A quick update, Chuck?
Sure. The study team met yesterday via teleconference, and we have targeted the next 2 weeks to finish up an Excel spreadsheet that summarizes each group's priorities and their estimates in terms of study feasibility. That will be that's all due by not later than the 16th of this month, after which Liz will kindly finish off the table. That table will then be used to hopefully in our next meeting, which is 13 days from now, 2 weeks from yesterday. And we will hopefully be able to develop some possible motions to present to the council that would decide what studies, if any, we would ask staff to develop cost estimates and feasibility estimates. We also yesterday reviewed the some definitions of key terms that are used in the proposed studies, and edited that those definitions, and a red line of those will be going out, a red line based on Liz's original submission and the changes we agreed to yesterday as the little drafting team. Those will be sent out to hopefully all constituencies and groups, so that if anybody else wants to suggest any edits, we're going to ask that those be in by the 16th as well, so that we can review those at our meeting in 2 weeks. So hopefully by our next council meeting, the drafting team will be close to some motions, if not having some motions, to move forward on the studies.
Okay, thanks. Any questions? I say everybody in the council plus the alternates is on the list that's been created for this, so hopefully you're all being kept informed of everything, and all of it is open to everyone in the council.
Yeah, and that's a good point. We did decide yesterday to create a list for this group, and as Aubrey said, the list includes all counselors and anybody that's participating on the council, regardless of your role, and then the alternates that have been participating in that group as well.
Okay, thanks. No questions on registration abuse policy. We've started putting together the drafting team, I think. Glenn's gotten to the point of having the list together, having names from many of the constituencies. I don't know if it's all yet, and I don't know if the first meeting has been set yet.
Avery, it's Glenn.
Yeah?
The first meeting has been set for tomorrow, but there are constituencies who should still nominate appointees. That is the ISP, the non-commercials.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the other, the CCTLD response, the draft that was produced by Edmund and was discussed on the list was sent by the deadline yesterday. I forwarded a copy to the council list, you know, about an hour or so before I forwarded it to the comments list, and I made sure that it actually arrived. I don't know if there's any questions or issues on that at the moment. In terms of working groups, I don't know if you want to comment, Mike. From my perspective, acting as interim chair of that group, I think it's gone quite well. I think there's a report that is almost complete, and that within, I think, a month, we should have a report that can go out for constituency and public review, and then start looking with the council after that on what the next steps need to be. I don't know, Mike, if you want to add anything.
Well, I hope it's quicker than a month, hopefully within 2 or 3 weeks, and we'll be able to discuss it in Mexico City.
Yeah, I'm hoping for that too, but within a month with me being cautious. 2 or 3 weeks is within a month. On IRTP Part A, PDP, I don't know whether, Mike, you want to speak or Marika wants to speak, but I understand that one's going well also.
Yep, I think the initial report is published or about to be published by Marika, and then we can start addressing it on the council.
The public comment period, this is Marika, the public comment period is due to open tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. And that'll be a constituency comment period also, correct?
Correct.
Right, okay, great.
And the report has been published on the front page of the GNSO.
Oh, okay, thank you. I'm terribly late. Just checked. Okay, on GNSO improvements, the PPSD is working on its charter update, pretty much complete. It will be coming through as the OSC one did, and the OSC, I think we already talked about quite extensively today. The one thing that I know is part of both of them is that an invitation is planned for, and I guess Chuck can talk the best, better than I can, to try and start getting some population into the work teams. And I don't know if you want to add anything, Chuck.
Excuse me, I was on mute. The plan is, assuming that there's no objections from the council, after this meeting for the invitation for the five work teams underneath both the PPSC and the OSC to go out after this meeting. And I'm assuming, and staff can correct me if I'm wrong, that they will go ahead and distribute that invitation as broadly as possible, and that means to the council list, to the liaison list, to the advisory committee, different representatives, posting on the website, et cetera, so that there's broad recognition. The intent is these teams would be open to anyone who wants to constructively participate, and so that invitation has been approved by both steering committees and is ready to go.
And it will point to both of the traffic charters, and I know in the PPSC we made a point to make sure it was known that it was a draft charter, and I expect at this point the OSC can probably do the same.
Yes, yeah, that is correct, and it will the draft charters for the work teams will be able to be worked by the work teams themselves if they want to suggest some changes on that. So I think both steering committees decided that it would be good, as recommended by the planning team as well, that they would be able to we'd give them a chance to look at it and suggest any changes to the draft charters before they're finally approved of the work. That's for the work teams.
Thank you. Any questions on that?
Could I make a statement? This is Rob.
Sure. On improvements, or is this on restructuring?
Actually, on the invitation, if I may.
Oh, fantastic. Sure.
I'd like to ask if our liaisons, particularly from the ALAC and the CCNSO, in addition to the various GNSO invites, could also pass on that invitation announcement to their various stakeholders. I think it would be helpful to get the word out from as many possible sources as possible.
Oh, sure.
Thank you. So, yeah, you'll receive that. So, Rob, you'll make sure that all of our liaisons and friendly contacts have a copy of that invitation.
Yeah, Glenn and I will coordinate that. We'll also have a copy posted on the ICANN main webpage. I think Denise may have mentioned it in her statement earlier. An announcement was posted overnight with just a general update to the community about the overall efforts taking place with respect to GNSO improvements implementation, and this will be a sort of second tip from that effort.
Okay, thank you. Rob, did you want to go on with GNSO restructuring?
I think the overall message that I've discussed certainly with a couple of you all is that the significant issue that it's been a little bit over a month since the council has had a substantive discussion about the council restructuring. And I just certainly wanted in this update to encourage all of you, on top of everything else that you're doing, tremendous work on all these other policy issues, but make sure that you include that item on the agenda. We do have a draft implementation schedule that you all have discussed and that Avery shared with the board in early December, but since that time there hasn't been a lot of substantive council level discussion, and my only observation would be that the clock is ticking.
Okay, thanks. Fantastic.
Rob, can you quickly give the deadlines, the key deadlines for example, the constituency renewals and the stakeholder group charters submissions?
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. There are two very significant deadlines that are a part and parcel of the restructuring. One is the petition from the various constituencies for renewing, recertifying, reconfirming, whatever precise word you want to use, and that's going to need to take place by the end of this month. The board is meeting in February, and the anticipation was that those petitions would be submitted to the board in advance of their February meeting.
When is their February meeting?
That meeting is scheduled for February 3rd. As a staff, we typically have board paper submission deadlines that are, you know, anywhere from a week to 10 days prior to those meetings. I'm sure the board would recognize some flexibility if some constituencies are having some challenge in that regard, finishing up the work on their petitions, but it's certainly something that should be underway by now. I've had conversations with a couple of representatives from different constituencies who are making efforts in that regard, and it might be helpful for GNSO Council representatives from the various constituencies at your next meeting to share with the Council sort of an update in terms of what progress they're making in that regard. The second major phase deadline that the Board anticipates is submission of stakeholder group templates for the new stakeholder group prior to the Mexico City meeting. Now, it's important to understand that the Board is expecting these documents to come in because they want to be able to have the time for a public comment period and some time for their deliberations so they can reconfirm the various constituencies, so they can approve the stakeholder group petitions in time for the necessary decisions to be made for seating council reps by the June deadline. So those are the primary benchmarks that we're looking at right now. And it also may be useful at the next council meeting for various council representatives to share with the group sort of what they see as the status of those stakeholder template efforts and petitions as well.
And this is Denise. If any constituency feels that it won't be able to meet the request, the suggested deadline for constituency renewal applications, please do let Rob know as soon as possible, and or feel free to communicate that to the board directly.
Rob, did you give the date for stakeholder group charters?
The Mexico City board meeting takes place, on March 6th, something along those lines? So that would be the timetable for that. Now, again, from an internal staff perspective, we typically have paper deadlines due around 10 days to 2 weeks prior to that date. But again, I think that the board would be flexible, particularly if ongoing efforts have been pursued by various stakeholder groups to get their acts together.
Yeah, one of the things I think I'm going to do with the schedules is add these dates to the items list that we keep on the list of on the wiki of things that need to be done on the web, so that those dates are more visible to people.
Certainly, and if at any point any of the constituencies or stakeholder groups would welcome staff input, guidance, assistance, please let me know. We're happy to provide it. We've already had a number of inquiries from various potential new constituencies. We've only had, as you know, one official notice of intent to form, but a number of other inquiries have come in, and I guess since the holiday season and the new year, a number of folks are re-engaged in that process, and it seems like we will be seeing some additional NOIF probably in the next month or so.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, Denise, for the various statuses. I didn't thank you at the time. Moving on to the status, we have two items under any other business. One is the GNSO Council Vice Chair election. Lynn, can you speak to this?
Yes, thank you, Adri. The custom up to now has been that there is a formal nomination period for the election of the GNSO Council Vice Chair for the period of 2 weeks, and if the council agrees, we could start that tomorrow, and it would run until January 23. And then the usual custom is that there's not secret ballot voting, unless, of course, it's specially asked for, and that the results are that the voting is done at the council meeting, which would be on the 29th of January. Would that be in order?
Yeah. Is there any objection to following that process? Okay, fantastic. So the nominations will start tomorrow.
That's right.
And we will hold a vote on this at our next meeting, and I will put it on the agenda. Okay. Next item on any other business is from the as part of organizing the AXO, the Advisory Committee Supporting Organization joint work. Basically, a lot of the suggestions that that this council came up with during the Thursday meeting, were which I took to this group, were accepted. One of the ones was accepted is that there be three topics that that the topics be picked in advance, and that an explanation of what those topics are and why these matter be put together, and these will be compiled. I think Kieran is still on here, so if we need any more explanation, even though we're running late, he can give it better than I. But what I basically wanted to sort of mention is that we'll have to sort of, on the list over the next couple of weeks, see if we can't start churning out some ideas of what our three topics are and why they are important to us, so that I'll be able to deliver those to that particular effort, by the end of January, beginning of February. Kieran, I don't know if you're still here and wanted to add anything.
Hi.
Hello, yes, I'm still on the line. Not particularly. It would just be very, very useful if we could get those topics in plenty of time, and then they'll give everyone an opportunity to work, and then we'll just have a much better session.
Right. And at the next meeting, we can give some details, or perhaps even send them on the list, of how the organization is going of that event. Any other issues? Any other business that
just
people would
like?
Just
a very brief
yes,
reminder,
sir.
Aubrey, and I think that a written reminder will be going out for this shortly, and that is that it is looking like we will have significant working sessions on Saturday and Sunday before the Mexico City meeting. So if people aren't already anticipating that, they would be good if you were, and that you notified your constituencies in that regard.
Yeah, in fact, I think I've already got too many things that want to be scheduled in there. Figure out how they all fit in. Anything else? And, by the way, as part of, just to remind people, as part of the action pending list, there is always a list of what topics are anticipated for various meetings. So those topics are indeed posted. What hasn't happened yet is they haven't really been parsed between Saturday or Sunday yet. I'll have to put some time into our next agenda to spend a little bit of time looking at the agenda and what we need to do. Anything else? In which case, I thank you all. I hope your years have started well. And I'll talk to you again in a few weeks, or probably sooner because of the many meetings.
Thanks, all right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.